Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
3-2. Adolfo swings and misses, and that is strike three to end the ball game. Steve, as your last wish, your final thoughts for today's telecast?
It was, look, it started out with all the excitement and everything you would expect for a spring game. It ended in tragedy. I think everything is going to be fine when we reconvene on Tuesday.
Everybody thought I was foolish my whole career, you know. I think you got to practice winning, and you get 30 chances, so you don't want to wait till opening day to, you know, whether a team or a manager. You know, you're supposed to be using those games to anticipate and make decisions. So that's why I like it, in the sense that when I get to opening day or October, there really isn't any difference in the concentration and the process.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show. Afternoons on The Score.
Some good fun on, for my money, the best TV broadcast in baseball with Jason Benetti and Steve Stone at NBC Sports Chicago. Then a little Tony La Russa there on the back end of it. You're listening to the Parkins and Spiegel Show. And you could see us on Twitch. Our next guest, kind enough to join us in the Twitch room as well, twitch.tv/Chicago670thescore. Senior producer over at NBC Sports Chicago, the home of the White Sox, and host of the White Sox Talk podcast, Ryan McGuffey, back with us on the Parkins and Spiegel Show by way of the Alpamonte Nissan Hotline, Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park. Ryan, what's up, man? How you doing today?
I'm well, boys. Always happy to be with you. Talk about the best you-know-what team in the American League. Let's go.
Yeah, about it.
All right.
It's like, here's the thing, Danny. How many times have we played clips from the White Sox Talk podcast with McGuffey and Garfine and been like, man, they got good stuff. I guess we got to give them credit. You going to play our stuff? Huh? You going to play our stuff on your podcast? What do you think,
man,
sir?
There's a quid pro quo here. Okay. All right. It's finally, you scratch my back, I'll scratch you. Absolutely. I'm buying the damn shirt, too. That's brilliant.
See, that's Tim. That's Tim, right, Danny? You didn't even have to push him that hard, and he went there.
Well, no, he went right there. But, yes, McGuffey, you got to buy the shirt, and then scratch yours. What do we got to do to get Benetti and Stone to wear those shirts during an upcoming broadcast?
I think Benetti, if you're looking to push the envelope, I think you know which way. I mean, Benetti would probably be the way to start. But, you know.
I'll get it to him.
Maybe we can work one in for spring training. Let's see what we can do.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're not talking about something serious like a regular season game, obviously.
Right.
That's, we can't, the church of regular season baseball.
I mean, God, how much fun can we possibly have? We're talking baseball here. Come on.
Yeah, well, that's the point, though, isn't it? That Tim's a dude who has fun.
I'm glad you did it, man. Yeah. That was awesome. Like, I'm glad you got that out of him, because that's who Tim is. So. Yeah, like, ideally he doesn't drop an F-bomb on your radio show, but, like, kind of ideally he does.
Disagree.
You know?
Disagree.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it people are still talking about it. What is it? 4 days later, so.
Yeah, well, and so that's the thing, man. And I got to say, I was actually, like, the fact that it made its way onto the broadcast and people are like, oh, this is just, like, so self-involved. And, yeah, part of it is self-involved. We wouldn't be talking about it as much if it would have happened on a different show as compared to ours. But also, like, the White Sox team account tweeting it out, you guys bringing it in to the first team broadcast, like, it does strike me as maybe unique within baseball that they would embrace something like that. Like, I feel like this team likes that counterculture, obviously the changing the game slogan from last year. I don't know if you agree, but I do not think that every team in baseball would have embraced that type of comment.
I was surprised the White Sox team account embraced it like they did. So
that makes two of us.
And I give them a hat tip for it, because if you're not relaying the message that your players are carrying every day, then what's the point? You have to be the message of the player. You can't just be like, okay, like, well, he said that. No, you have to embody everything of that. The White Sox have like multiple Tim Andersons right now. The entire city of Chicago should love everything about the personality of this team. They should. And if you don't, or if you don't see it, if you don't want to feel it, then that's on you. Because that's why I'm glad, Danny, like, that's why you pride him and didn't, like, don't apologize for being you. Don't apologize. Say what's on your mind. And he did, because that's who he is, and he didn't edit himself. And a lot of these guys, that's why a lot of them are saying World Series a bust. That's why a lot of them are saying we're better than the Twins. That's why a lot of them are saying, like, the playoffs aren't good enough. That's, stop sitting there going, okay, well, the ALCS is good. No, it's not good. Let the World Series be the goal. And it's okay to say you failed by not reaching your goal. We're going to go ahead and get them next year. This team has the capability of really taking the city by storm for the next at least 5 years.
And well, and they believe it from the top on down. Obviously, Rick says World Series is the goal. So it starts there, or does it start with Tim and permeate to Rick? Whatever, however it works. And the way Giolito talked about it earlier in the spring, that they took their foot off the gas a little bit. He didn't want to say that, but that's essentially what he said about the end of the year. You know, you'd be an idiot to not notice it and embrace it, and that includes the manager. And he's not an idiot. He's not. So if he looks at that and he sees this, I think he's done a very smart and successful public job of doing something that he needed to do, which is to be a coattail rider on the culture of that team. The culture is established. All you're doing, Tony, is showing up and trying to do it. And he said, his direct quote with Mullion Hall the other morning, "I'm working as hard as I can to be part of the White Sox family." That, frankly, is a level of humility I wasn't sure we were going to get. And he had to do it publicly, and I assume he's doing it privately as well.
Totally agree with you. I've not hid from my feelings when the White Sox hired Tony La Russa. I was very much on par with everybody else and didn't get it, didn't like it, didn't understand it, questioned Tony on it. We certainly talked about it on the podcast at length, but being on these Zooms with Tony, you know, the baseball side of him, seeing him every day, he's a soundbite machine. Like, he's pumping out stuff every single day that's the White Sox haven't had in a media presence since Ozzy. And I listen to what the players say about the guy. Like, you can sit there and listen to what a manager says, but listen to how the other players talk to him or talk about him. And he's permeating throughout the team from top to bottom, from Tim Anderson down, who Tim Anderson himself has admitted, you know, he questioned the move at the time. And I'm with you, Spiegs. I think all of us had this doubt, like, okay, here comes the old man saying my way or the highway, and this is how baseball was in my day. And it's been the complete opposite from at least everything that we've seen and been told. We're not in the room every day, but you get the feeling that the team knows exactly why he was brought here. He was for accountability and to get the team to where they're talking about going, which is the World Series.
We're talking to Ryan McGuffey, White Sox Talk Podcast, senior producer over at NBC Sports Chicago, the home of the White Sox. I will say, though, that those skepticisms were not without merit and unfounded. And I wonder, from the introductory press conference to the start of spring training, how much he was coached by the White Sox. Because this is a guy who was on the record as not liking Fernando Tatis' grand slam when they were up 7 runs or 10 runs or whatever it was last year. This is a guy who, at his introductory press conference, talked about judging the genuineness, or however he put it, of displays of concern for social justice causes. Like, this is a guy who very recently is on the record with things that would be against changing the game, bat flip, Tim Anderson, and individualism. So do you have any insight into what's happened from the White Sox standpoint with La Russa from when they hired him to the start of spring training? Because I would have to imagine something happened.
I agree with you. I think everything, every one of those things you just said were dead on. And quite frankly, I think they, until we see these guys play from April 1 on, spring training, like whatever, nobody's bat flipping in spring training or anything like hitting home runs on a 3-0 count or all that stuff. Let's see what happens. Like, is that message going to still happen when they've lost four games in a row and Tim hits a big home run to, you know, take him out of this losing streak and he flips the bat? I still want to see that, because until we actually see an on-field moment and then it carry over into the dugout and how it all, like, we don't know yet. Like,
exactly.
Everything, all the words have been said correctly so far. I don't know about the coaching part is interesting. I think there's probably something to that. And maybe part of it was just, he just wasn't available, right? I mean, in some ways with the situation he had with the DUI stuff and then with the pandemic, not having to do the winter meetings, not having to be just out in front of it and be available all the time, kind of allowed them to get to spring training. And so whether that was coaching or chance or a combination of both, they needed spring training to start so they could start talking baseball with Tony. And now that we're here, you know, but I agree with you, Dave. I still think all of those things, until we see otherwise, until we actually see the moment on the field, there's still things that have to be, at least they have to be on the back burner for now. I think they're still there.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. I want to make sure we put a fine point on this, which is what the reasoning is that you don't want that kind of stuff to happen. Cause like, it's great to show the humility publicly. It's great to be realistic about who this game belongs to. And it's the players publicly. But if he doesn't do that privately, there could potentially be a moment where he curtails the personality and or confidence of a young, brash team, a young, brash, confident player. And if your manager does anything to curtail that personality and confidence, he's doing a massive bleeping disservice to the very job he's brought in to do. You know what I mean? So suck it up. So don't say it. So swallow it. And move past it. And publicly, yes, but he will be tested. It will absolutely be tested. It'll be tested in a few months when he feels a little more comfortable, when he feels a little more emboldened, and he feels like his Hall of Fame self, a Hall of Fame baseball person, you know, as he has dropped before. So it's like, it's not that hard to imagine the truth in terms of feelings coming out down the road. So what matters is how that's dealt with publicly, privately, and to make sure that those players don't feel less than in any possible way.
I agree. The one thing that's caught my attention, Tony has talked about how fortunate he has been to have this job, like ad nauseum almost. Like, he brings it up without even being asked about it almost every other day. And just so whether he walks through those doors every morning with this like 5 minutes of meditation, like, holy hell, like, I got this job and what an opportunity, like you said, to start this segment. He knows what he's doing. He's a smart baseball guy. He knows the talent that he's inherited. He can mess it up. Yes. Like, he can mess it up, but I think he knows better. I really do. I think I'm going to err on the side of caution, but I have been cautiously optimistic with what I've seen thus far.
Ryan McGuffey. Oh, go ahead, Speaks. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about something that's interesting to me right now in terms of the roster construction, because Yasmani Grandal is a little banged up, but we all know that he shouldn't be a guy who catches 120 games anyway. He just shouldn't be defensively. Who are the three catchers on this roster? And I think there will be three. I think they're going to have to go with three. I know it's going to be difficult, but it's going to be Grandal, Lucroy, and Yermín Mercedes, because he can play third. Zach Collins, because he's a lefty and can give you bench at-bats. Sebi Zavala, because he's the best defensively of the bunch. Do you agree that there'll be three, and who's the third?
I do agree there'll be three. I'm going to go Zach right now. I think the lefty, the lefty pop. I feel a little bit for Zach because he just has never truly been given the opportunity. After hearing Jonathan Lucroy's, they made him available on Zoom a couple weeks ago. And like 5 minutes into it, I was texting Garfine and Vinny and just saying, okay, so like assuming health and not an absolutely like 0 for 50 spring training, Jonathan Lucroy is on this team. I mean, just the hearing him talk, I'm like, okay, like I get it. I see it. So I just pencil him
in. A Lamborghini pitching staff. Like,
I pencil him in for sure. And then, yeah, like you said, it's a fight between the other two. I want to see Zach Collins as a catcher just because, like, we just don't know. I mean, it's such a limited sample size. You know, you look even his offense, people are like, well, he can't hit. Well, he's going like one for – he hit in the playoffs last year. It was a month and a half since he had picked up a bat. That was the most unfair plate appearance arguably in postseason history. So I mean, Zach probably at some point the only way he's going to get a chance might not be here. But right now, today – you're asking me that question. I will, unless maybe your main Mercedes hits, you know, 10 home runs in spring training again. And, you know, that's Chuck's crush. So if that happens, then Mercedes makes the team and we'll see. But I'm going to go Zach for now.
I remember one time I was watching a Bill Walton broadcast. This was probably back in like the mid 2000s. And he said, it was a late night NBA game. He said, "That was the greatest bounce pass in the history of the Sacramento Kings franchise." And I was like, do you have that chronicled in your head? Like the most unfair at bat in baseball postseason history. I love that from Ryan McGuffey of the White Sox Talk podcast. Last thing from me. Where is the single place the White Sox are most improved from last year to this year?
Ooh, bullpen. I mean, certainly their number three starter.
Yes.
But that bullpen has the chance to just be, I mean, Liam Hendricks, best closer in the game, are right there, top three. And that, so you cement the guys in the eighth inning and seventh inning. But the curiosity for me of Crochet and Kopech just kind of, I want to see them pitch all. I just want to see the bullpen. Like, I can't wait for the bullpen to pitch. That's crazy. If Giolito's starting, then I'm like itching and chomping at the bit to get to the bullpen. But that's how I feel about this White Sox bullpen. They could be, dare I say, Danny, Kansas City-esque, you know, like those mid to, like, I just feel like there's the chance for this bullpen to do things. And for and this is where La Russa, like, that's why he's brought in. Like, we're going to see it, the Hall of Fame manager is getting a lights-out bullpen with a ridiculous lineup that offers zero outs, no relief for a starting pitcher to sit there and go, okay, well, at least the number seven hitter. Oh, no, that's Andrew Vaughn. Oh, crap, Adam Eaton's behind him, and then there's Nick Matt. I just think the bullpen, there's a lot of answers. But because the rotation still has questions in the back, I have to go bullpen. I have to.
That is the most compelling aspect of this team for the hardcore baseball nerd. Is what is La Russa going to do with that bullpen? Because he gives the credit to Dave Duncan, as he did again on Friday with Mully and Haw, that Duncan is the one who said, oh, you've got Eckersley? Let's go with Gene Nelson and Rick Honeycutt in the eighth from righty-lefty, and let's go with Eric Plunk and Greg Catterae in the seventh, and defined the modern bullpen. That was Duncan. With this batch that he has, he could play it like Tampa last year, where you've got six or seven different lights out swing and miss arms that come at you from different looks and different angles, and you could use them at any part of the game. I cannot wait to see what the thought process is from La Russa on that. It's going to make them a must watch every single night.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's just so they may have openers. I mean, Kopech could pitch two innings. Crochet could go another two, and then you have everybody else fall in line. I just think it allows you to have flexibility with that five spot if you continue to have struggles.
Because those two guys are gravy. Those two guys are your gravy. Ambidextrous gravy.
I heard the gravy comments last week. There's no such thing as bad gravy.
Correct. Yeah, and you've got right-handed and left-handed gravy in the bullpen. Yeah, that's a rare.
Don't pretend like that comment made sense.
They have gravy. They have like two-sided ambidextrous gravy.
made all the sense in the world.
Well, I definitely, as Parkins, as Parkins started to explain it, you know, there's a situation where gravy does become a problem. So,
what?
Yeah, the vegetable
a little
thing
too much
is right,
Parkins.
Like gravy on vegetable, like yeah, and you know.
I love gravy, but it just ambidextrous gravy. It's just there are times when it's not necessary. There are times you get potatoes without gravy.
The whole point of gravy is you can do whatever you want with it. It is a bonus.
I'm thinking like heat lamp gravy is bad gravy. Like old country sitting underneath like one of those old buffets.
That's true.
The gravy. Yeah, that's the stay away from gravy. So I don't think that's ambidextrous. Yeah, so there's.
Ever since Spiegel went vegan, his food analogies have gotten a little worse. And they need a little bit too much explanation. And thank you.
A little bit. Yeah.
Thank you. Ryan McGuffey. All right, so it's not too much of an ask to get Benetti to wear a shirt, get Tim to wear a shirt. I know Tim will.
Tim wears it, and then him and Benetti have this thing where they always kind of like. Have this, and then it leads to a Twitter battle, and it's before a game. So if Tim's doing one of these for those on the Twitch channel,
okay.
Benetti does it. Yeah, I think get it to Tim, and then let's go from there.
There you go.
We're working on it. Ryan McGuffey, right. NBC Sports Chicago White Sox Talk Podcast. Thank you.
Anytime, guys.
Good stuff there from Ryan McGuffey. At the top of the hour, we will get into some of the nonsense surrounding the quarterbacks most prominently linked to the Bears, but a superstar Chicago athlete. We heard him with a frankly unusual amount of candor given his history in this city. It's next on The Score.
Well, specifically on the discontinued use of video, Javi Baez said a lot of stars are struggling. I'm just one more. But the way that it is, it's not the way we play baseball. I need video. I need video to make adjustments during the game.
I mean, JD Martinez hitting 199. He's Captain Video America. And nobody watches more video than him. And it's true. And believe, if a player thinks he needs video, he's right. And if he thinks he doesn't need video, he's also right.
It's just... That is superstar privilege right there, Speaks. Anybody else says that nonsense, you don't get a gig. You don't get Sunday Night Baseball and the MLB on Fox.
When's the jig going to be up on this? You know?
Oh, his star is rising, man.
Speaking of windows, I'm assuming you're a Steeler fan.
Well, that's only sensible to
Makes
go
sense
from
to me.
Windows to the Steelers. Makes all the sense in the world.
Allegedly stepping out on J-Lo, huh? Reportedly flirting with other women from TV shows, from some Southern Charm show.
I am unhip to this A-Rod rumor, and yet welcome.
I hate you.
As specious or not as it may be, bring it, Shane. What do you know?
Just that. That
I'm guessing unsourced.
Out on J-Lo. It was a few weeks ago, a big social media thing, and the woman, I can't remember her name, some blonde girl from Southern Charm, the show, was confirming that, yes, they had a very flirtatious relationship, but... that he didn't do anything physical.
Madison LaCroix.
That's it.
She wants some more salsa.
A-Rod. Too famous for that, man. Can't be doing that. Not good.
I'm pretty sure you shouldn't be doing that regardless of your level of fame.
Obviously, but I'm saying the average dude who is, you know, a contractor is not going to make it onto page six if you do that. And when your fiance is J-Lo, right? That's what I mean. The fact that Shane knows about it makes him a little too famous for that sort
of thing.
All right,
so to be clear, you are advocating adultery for contractors. Did I hear that right? Guys,
I think that's exactly the takeaway that you should have from that comment.
No. Pro-contractor adultery.
Let's listen to J-Lo.
Thank you, Danny.
Is there another guy that was as much of a bag during his career and universally thought of as a horrible person that the public has done like a 180 on? Is there another guy outside of A-Rod?
See, the thing is, I think it's almost a 360 now, though. There was a 180, and now, I mean, a lot of, you know, there was a time there where he was at Fox. I was like, oh, my God, I had no idea. And I read a couple articles about how he had dug deep and learned some things. And I think Wright Thompson wrote one, or somebody wrote it. It looked like a Wright Thompson piece at ESPN, the magazine at the time. It was long and involved, and I... I bought it a little bit, and now I'm done. Now I'm done with it. I think he's back to full-on Bagdim that he was in
his prime
as a
player. He did a complete 360.
Yes.
I don't know, man. I'm with Shane. Like, the fact that he could be on the broadcast around the World Series for Fox and work for ESPN on their flagship baseball property with Sunday Night Baseball after being banned from the sport for a year and is engaged to J-Lo, that he was at the inauguration. Like, there was just – it was like Obama, Bill, Hillary, A-Rod just talking on a stage. He's just – he's so famous. He's like, he's been in our lives for fame for a quarter century at this point.
Yeah.
That it's got to be close to that. That I don't know, man. Like, is he going to make the Hall of Fame with the absolute dead to rights admission of performance enhancing drugs? Because other all time greats have gotten close, right? Like Clemens gets close, Bonds gets close, but they don't admit it. And so if A-Rod has admitted it and paid a punishment for it, and is now back in the good graces of those around the sport, I don't know. I feel like A-Rod's got a chance, and it's completely illogical, so you know I'll hate it when that time comes around to discuss it. But I feel like A-Rod has ingratiated himself with enough of baseball again that he's got a shot.
God, I hope not.
Commissioner Manfred, I want to ask you about the leadership of having to direct the efforts to put together all this protocol between the players and the clubs. Just a tremendous job.
Well, thank you.
That's not
most people don't know this. Yeah. For carrying that much water, A-Rod also now has scoliosis. Most people didn't know that. It's true.
He's got a zigzag back?
It's true.
Like a young DP?
Yeah. I actually aspire to him because most people with scoliosis and zigzag backs cannot land a J-Lo, but he is now able to do that. So good job by him.
Roger Bozart.
Your girl, Steph, is J-Lo caliber.
Amazing.
In your life. Come on.
Of course.
Now.
Hey, speaking of zigzag backs, have you guys seen that movie Molly's Game with Jessica Chastain on Netflix? Okay, so Gretchen and
based on a true story of the crazy Hollywood game where
I didn't know it was based on a true story, but last night Gretchen and I watched it, and like the first scene, they're talking about her being a mogul skier, and then she's like, "Oh, and I picked up scoliosis," and I started laughing to myself. I said, "Gretchen, she's like old zigzag back over there," and she's like, "What the hell are you talking about? That's so rude." So you got to be there, I guess.
Yeah, no, as always, you know, Shane finds humor in scoliosis.
Would you go see Daredevil?
Which one is that now?
That's Ben Affleck's new movie about the guy who's a blind crime fighter who turns into Daredevil.
True story.
Still a true story. Shane, that's the surgery that I had. The spinal fusion where you put the rod into the spine or onto the spine. That's what I had. But then I got a little staph infection like Alex Smith, and they had to take it out. So I got no instrumentation in there anymore.
Oh God.
True story.
Contractors checking in on the text line. Hey guys, I'm a contractor currently painting the dining room for a customer. Thanks for the advice, Danny. I think I'll go start hitting on her right now.
there you go. You're welcome.
Green light, baby. Green
light.
All
I'm saying is if the contractor commits adultery, not likely to end up on page 6 like A-Rod. That was my only point.
I understand. To Shane's point about a vilified and hated athlete who does a turn like this and ends up being popular, that's an archetype. That is an archetype. And I remember the first time I noticed it was Sterling Sharp, the former Packers wide receiver, who everybody thought was a bag because he was as rude as could possibly be to the media. And then he ends up, of course, in the media. Like Jim Rice, legendarily a jag to the Boston media. I think he still does pre- and post-game on Nesson for Red Sox games. A lot of those guys make their turns because all of a sudden they realize, you know people didn't like? Olin Krutz. People didn't like Olin Krutz. It's a very common thing for those guys to suddenly realize, this loathing that I've had actually is fueled by a personality that would benefit me in such places.
I mean, the media one is simple. It's just until you need the check. I've got a need for this, so I do it. Now, in Olin's case, he was just gruff as a player and whatever, and now he's really good at it, and that comes with wisdom. But when it's an executive or a coach or someone like that, and they get fired, and then all of a sudden it's like, I'm unemployed. I could use a gig. I will get into media. Scott Pioli was this way in Kansas City. There was literally a front page expose headlined Arrowhead Anxiety because of how toxic of a relationship and culture he permeated within that building. And then he got fired from the Chiefs, and all of a sudden he was on Sunday Night Football and SiriusXM like 2 weeks later. It's like, really? Really? You were anonymous for 4 years, and now you've got all these jobs just laying in the weeds. It kind of upsets you a little bit, frankly. But yeah, man, I think A-Rod's got a real shot, frankly, at Cooperstown. I honestly do.
Oh, boy.
When is he on the ballot, by the way? That hasn't happened yet, but it should be soon, right? He's been out for more than 5 years, hasn't he?
I think he's been on the ballot.
Has he been on the ballot? Well, that would really make my point moot if he's getting like 10% of the vote. But I have it. I don't think
2022. A-Rod, David Ortiz.
Yeah. Okay. 2022. Yeah. Yeah.
So my fault. He has not been on the ballot. So A-Rod.
I was gonna say I would have noticed that conversation happening if he had been on the ballot. So okay. So next year, we get to learn if my hypothesis is correct. He will not be a first ballot Hall of Famer. No way. But if he comes in at a higher number than like Bonds and Clemens started at, who have been climbing incrementally, and he continues down this path towards redemption, I think he'll get there, man.
I don't know, man. Manny Ramirez isn't close. He doesn't get close.
But he's not doing the same things that A-Rod's doing. You don't see Manny Ramirez on Wednesday Night Baseball. Like, you don't see Manny Ramirez in the studio and carrying water for the commissioner in national TV interviews. Like, that's just – you don't – so he's I bet you that A-Rod is working with that specific goal in mind. Like that he's that calculated, and that he knows that he needs to rebuild his image in that way. I bet you he's thought about it.
Has anybody realized just how bad he is at that particular job of doing color analysis next to Matt Vasgersian on a Sunday
night?
Has anybody picked that up? Does that seem to have any sort of value or effect on his place in the role?
Doesn't matter.
Not yet.
He's just so famous in a way that the vast majority of baseball people aren't, that just having A-Rod there, good-looking guy, high Q rating, all-time player, pretty smart. Like that'll translate. That's it.
An incredible story is circulating. It's not new, but it is circulating now from Mark Carrig on The Athletic. I don't know how it caught fire again, but it involves the championship belt. You know how some teams have championship belts, Danny? Like a wrestling-style championship belt. That they'll pass around to whoever was the hero or whatever. Mark Carrig wrote a story last year about how the owners will celebrate the end of the arbitration season by handing out a championship belt to an unsung hero in their battle over dollars. It goes to the team that did most to achieve the goals set by the industry.
That's your game.
Yeah, and Carrig's, in other words, Mark Carrig says, the team that did the most to keep salaries down in arbitration, they're given a championship belt. There are certain things you shouldn't celebrate and or ever should be made public that you're celebrating. Keeping the salaries of your employees down is not something to celebrate.
No, I remember when that came out, like you said, a while ago. So I don't know why it's just making the internet on fire again today. The internet, like, regurgitates the same arguments.
It's weird, man. It's weird.
Yeah. All the time. Twitter and the sports Twitter today is relitigating whether or not unpaid internships,
dude,
have value or are too classist and that entire thing. It's like there's nothing new to say and contribute to that conversation. I don't know why it comes up quarterly on the internet. Like, yes, unpaid internships are a privilege because not everybody can afford them, but would I rather those unpaid internships exist or no internship? People make that conversation like, well, just make those internships paid. As someone who's inside that industry, I'll tell you,
it's not
like, oh, well, we'll just make it paid. It's we'll make it go away.
And it has gone away.
It has gone away for the vast majority of the industry, which sucks. I fully agree the internship should be paid and that would help diversify media. But unfortunately, internships have just gone away basically entirely.
Mm-hmm. So. I interned for 1 year, 12 months as a free intern for McNeil and Boers in 1994-95. And then I got hired as a part-time
Parents help you pay your bills?
What's that?
Were your parents helping you pay your bills?
I was a musician. I was also a cashier at Armitage Hardware at Armitage in Sheffield. I was also bartending three nights a week at Otis's on Halstead. I was working at Inside Track Record Store on the weekends. I was doing what you got to do.
When I was an unpaid intern, I was working at Boston Blackie's and was a Sunday school aide, but also was living at home with my parents on their health insurance with them paying my cell phone bill. And you know what I mean? So like it was not everybody is able to take a 12-month thing. But again, it's a good thing. Internships in general are better than not. And unfortunately, they've gone the way of the dinosaur in the vast majority of the business. But yeah, the internet just likes to relitigate things that have been litigated many, many, many times and then recreate reasons to be outraged. We were going to talk about Javi Baez here. Then we got sidetracked into A-Rod and all that. But it's not a big deal. We can get to it. He is being unusually candid. We'll let you hear from Javi next on The Score.
I do think with Javi, he talked about that all year. I think there's probably no one that feeds off the crowd more than Javi. I think he's an entertainer, and I think he loves that aspect of the game. And then he kept talking about the video all year. And I candidly wasn't aware that he was that he needed that kind of instant feedback as much as he did. But he was consistent kind of from day one that it was hard for him to react. I think that would be a nice change for him to be able to do that.
Jed Hoyer on Javi Baez. There's five shortstops, right, Speaks, that are going to dominate the offseason. Javi Baez, 29 years old, is the oldest among them. They're all looking at Fernando Tatis's $340 million contract. Javi says he wants to be a Cub, but help me out here. It's Lindor, it's Correa, it's Trevor Story, it's Javi, and who's the fifth?
Corey Seager of the
Corey
Dodgers.
Corey Seager, thank you.
What's interesting is that Marcus Semien signed a one-year deal with Toronto. That's $18 million for his one-year deal, so he now will be on that list too. And to a lesser extent, Andrelton Simmons, who signed a one-year deal with Minnesota. It's going to be a preposterous shortstop market next off.
So Javi struggled, and he was about video, but the team also struggled, and none of their stars performed. And this is a unusually candid Javi Baez about himself and the team struggles from last year into this year.
Javi, last year you were a really big advocate of having video in the game and how much that affected you. I'm curious, when you found out this year that video is going to be back, how excited were you for that?
Really excited. Last year, man, I don't want to talk about last year, but, it was frustrating to me, to a lot of players. But it was 2 months. It was 2 months of baseball that I felt in a rush. I felt like I didn't have time to make adjustments. And I'm not the guy that shows you everything we got, everything I got in the first half. I can have a bad half or a decent first half, and then my second half I can make the first half disappear. And we didn't have that. I didn't have that trust in me. And I was ready. I was not mentally ready for what happened last year. But I always like to compete, and I always to better myself that I can get better every day. But last year, offensively was tough for me, and this year that we got the video, I got the comfort that it's gonna be great for me. Really happy that we're gonna have way more games now, and I'm just trying to get used to these new guys that we have. Trying to get everybody together. This spring training, there's a lot of new faces that we got to learn and get to know the guys. Obviously, we'll see what happens when the game starts in Chicago, and we'll see, obviously, how many fans are going to be allowed in the field.
How real was the impact of not having the fans and the energy for you as an emotional player to feed off of?
Oh, it was the worst, to be honest. It was worse than facing a pitcher in spring training in the backfield, to be honest. I didn't like it at all. We didn't have the privacy in our dugout to help whoever was running a second or whoever was hitting, or details that we help each other. We couldn't do it because the other team had everything. But like I said before, it was the same thing for both team, and that's my excuse. But obviously, it's not something that we got to take away from, because it was the same for everybody.
Wow. It's really interesting.
It's good stuff, man. I mean, I feel like most guys would not be as candid about specific reasons, but he's talking about external factors there. Like, he's acknowledging, like, yeah, it's an excuse, but he's talking about, like, hey, I wasn't worse. It was my processes of feeding off of the fans and the video and the ability to communicate in-game. Like, he's pointing to a lot of external factors as contributing to his bad season. And some of those should be returning, but some of them won't. It's not going to be 40,000 people at Wrigley for a long time.
No, there's not. But it's interesting to hear him like that, because it sounds like he's still kind of trying to work it out a little bit. That he's being self-reflective and thinking about just how bad it was, because it was a horrific offensive performance, and he knows it, and he's saying about how he wasn't ready. And then, as you mentioned, he's pointing out things that are an excuse, but they shouldn't be an excuse. But the reality is they did affect him. It's really interesting to be to have no fans, so you don't get that energy. And then for him also to feel exposed, like he felt like they couldn't even talk about stuff they usually talk about in the dugout, because the other teams are hearing that and seeing that. So it's just a completely different thing for him. Yeah, good for him for talking about it. Seems like he's got more work to do. He's got more work to do to, like, make sure that he's on top of some of those issues, which may linger, as you say, depending on the crowd and the lack of energy and the lack of audience that's there for him.
Well, he says he wants to be a Cub, but if they don't sign him soon, contract extensions do not happen in season very often for guys who are in the last year of their deal. They most figure you don't have to have Scott Boras for your agent to be like, the season's already started, why deal with the distraction, and I'm 160 games away from having 30 teams being able to bid on my services instead of right now only one can. So if we don't get a Javi Baez extension in the next 4 weeks or whatever, 6 weeks, he's going to hit the open market, don't you think?
I think it's likely, unless he's dealt at the deadline. That's entirely possible.
But sure.
Javi is a very difficult decision. That's a very difficult long-term decision. From a purely baseball perspective and thinking about his future as a ball player, I'm a no on Javi Baez, because of the lack of evolution of plate discipline. And I know last year is a terrible aberration, and we're talking about those reasons why, but overall there's not an evolution for plate discipline. There's the fact that as athleticism wanes, his value defensively and as a base runner is going to wane along with it. So it's a tricky one for me, but I'm a no from a purely baseball perspective. There is a marketing power to Javier Baez. There is a marketing power within the game itself. You talk to some of their international scouts, the kids that they sign, including the ones they signed this past offseason, they have pictures of Javi Baez on their walls. A lot of them. It's a big deal. Christian Hernandez, who is like the next A-Rod that they were talking about, this tall shortstop that they signed, has pictures of Javier Baez on his walls. It's a big part of how the Cubs were able to close that deal, according to Oneri Flita, who is the international scouting boss who was on with me and Bruce over the offseason. So there's all sorts of value there. And there's the fact that because of the glut in the market that you were mentioning, I think he'll come a lot cheaper
than
some of those guys. Yeah.
I think the price is...
I think that complicates it. I think it really
does. But I think that it helps the Cubs. I think the struggles from last year, the fact that they feel like they have to keep some of that core, how marketable he is, and the shortstop market, and the economic situation in baseball, I think the Javi Baez market's going to come back to the Cubs. And I would bet on him being
back. It's falling back into a manageable place for the Cubs, you think?
Yeah. So I'd bet on Javi being a Cub beyond this year, and I'd bet that when he signs that extension, it's a number that most people are comfortable with.
Put a number on it. Give us your best guess. 15 per?
More. But I think... If Javi signed 6 for $150, 25 per.
That's George Springer's exact deal.
Right. I think that if Javi Baez signed 6 $150, everyone's like, that works.
That's a hell of a commitment for somebody both of you think hasn't evolved enough to warrant it.
I'm uncomfortable with it, Shane.
Frankly, it doesn't break their bank, though, man. They should be spending $200 million on payroll again within a year. So I don't think that that's necessarily bad money.
If you told me that they were going to sign two of the four, and that might be high, but two of the four, Rizzo, Contreras, and Contreras has an extra year, obviously, Bryant and Baez. I think Rizzo's going to sign and stay here. And if I had to pick one of the others, at this point it's Baez in terms of the logic. I'm just not sure, like the logic of whether they will and why they would and all of that. I don't know that I would if I was running the baseball team, to be honest.
Yeah, I think Rizzo and Baez stay. Contreras and Bryant are gone in various forms. Probably Bryant walking at the end of the year, depending on how they start the season. And I could see Contreras being traded next year.
As soon as Miguel Amaya is ready and they feel okay about him.
Yeah. And again, he's got it'd be really nice if Contreras could put together a full 162 and not just amazing halves of baseball seasons.
I wonder if Javi would sign 5 for $100 right now.
No, he would not. No way. Dude, I mean, he's 1 year away from free agency. Like, yeah. Don't you feel like that's the... I would think that that's the floor that he would be getting into, but we're running late here. The comparisons between the biggest name quarterbacks on the market as they relate to the Bears, next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.